That's all cool. Besides, my politics are not correct. That's right. I have incorrect politics.
Whee!
That's all cool. Besides, my politics are not correct. That's right. I have incorrect politics.
I recently had a little conclave with Zappa, and he complained. I was complimenting on his ability to make people laugh. He says, yeah, but who's going to make me laugh? So does he have a sense of humor? Do I have a sense of humor? Only when you, it's like making love. When you feel it, I feel it. If you get horny, I get horny. If you like it, I like it.
Oh, Bob. Ooh. I can't handle it. Let's play some more tape.
Okay, let's...
This one comes from Muzaffarabad, Pakistan. A right-wing religious coalition edged out a liberal alliance headed by Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto's party in a state election yesterday that centered on arming Muslim militants in the Indian state of Kashmir. More than 18,000 paramilitary troops, police, and rangers were deployed to help keep order during the voting. And that seems to be the pattern there. Pakistan, under very heavy U.S. influence, the number there is 18. India, somewhat autonomous, but more in the Soviet sphere of things, definitely 22 territory. And as further proof of that, there was a very interesting article in the Globe and Mail, which appeared on Tuesday, May 22nd. And this was about the Korean minority in the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union's Korean minority originally lived among the northern Pacific coast and on Sakhalin Island, where they had led a quiet farming existence for several centuries. But in 1937, Stalin decreed that all 180,000 Koreans in the Soviet Far East were enemies of the state and ordered them transported 3,000 kilometers west by railway freight cars to the steppes and mountains of Kazakhstan and the smaller neighboring republics of Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan. Kazakhstan has 104,000 Koreans, of whom 22,000 live in Alma-Ata. And moving on into other areas in Asia, it was just reported that Vanunu, the guy who was sentenced by the Israeli Supreme Court for leaking the story to the London Sunday Times that Israel has nuclear weapons, his jail term has just been confirmed at 18 years. And here's something on a more personal note, a little closer to home. The Department of Communications has just issued experimental licenses for public cordless telephones. And the minister chose to make the announcement in Toronto on May the 22nd. Now, there were three people there demonstrating the service, and they displayed their licenses. Two of them, one of part of the Bell family, and another one, Rogers family of communications giants, both had their licenses issued on May 22nd. A smaller company there had their license issued on May 18th. And get this, all licenses issued by the Department of Communications paid a fee of $19.
Hey, Bob, can't believe it. I was in bed with the beer and the broad, and I fell asleep on you. But anyway, I just want Boulder, Colorado, the university where the exes said major breakthroughs would be found in longevity research. They apparently have found in nematodes, that's roundworms, a gene that controls aging, linked to sexual activity. They left that certain roundworms make love and make babies, the longer they live. Similar to Taoist practices, where the less that men ejaculate, the longer they live, or the more that women can control their cycle, stop having their menstruation, the longer they live, the healthier they are too. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hi, Bob. Well, this is the that the last caller fell asleep on, so don't feel too bad. He fell asleep on me, too. But don't worry. We taped your program and caught it for breakfast. Hope you're well. Love you. Bye.
Well, this is Grimsby calling with unusual news. Our child went to bed last night saying, Bob, Bob, Bob. He woke up this morning saying, Bob, Bob, Bob. We're troubled. Bye. Lewd Madonna show attracts men in blue. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I picked up a newspaper too soon after talking to you, Bob, and I might have injured myself. Canadians want to pay more income tax to clean up the environment, do they? I see. I'm beginning to see. Listen, all I want to say is Bob is the world's greatest salesman, but you got to bear in mind what the product is. In the 60s, they wanted to know if you could pass the acid test. Today, Bob wants to know if we can pass the reality check. I'm not so sure yet.
It is the key. The mystery of the balances is there. The Masonic secret lies there. The church forbids its angels entry there. The gypsies camp there. Blood is exchanged there. Mothers weep there. It is night there. 30 and some number is 62. And that number was 10 and 42. That number translates now to them. That number is the answer in the way the numbers answer.
Hi, this is for Bob. Let's see now. Pornography, drugs, violence, rock and roll. And I think I didn't know what you meant when you said in a couple weeks I might hate Bob, but I did spend a couple hours thumbing through, an hour maybe, thumbing through all the volumes of Campaigner today. And maybe that's enough to throw just about everything I ever thought I knew into question. Thanks, Bob.
On and off, and this third anniversary show off to a special start tonight. We thought we would...
Silence is golden.
Yeah, we thought we would... I don't know, people will get uptight about dead air on the radio. We, in the past, have promoted dead air. And tonight we thought we'd start off with some dead air just to celebrate. But thanks for all our listeners, though, for calling up. And
let's take this call. We got a call.
Right away? So early, Bob?
Yeah.
In fact, we're only 25 minutes into the show already. We haven't said a thing.
Thank you.
But yes, our third anniversary show, Bob and Mike together, the Church of the Subgenius. Hello.
We outlasted them all.
You're on the air?
The silent guy again.
Hello. Speak to us.
They're looping back to... stuff. Now,
there's another line. We've got the other line. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Ray.
Hey, Ray. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Listen, since we're on the third year anniversary, I think it's time that we should do the third ray.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's hear the third ray.
Yellow ray. This is one of my pet rays. The throat chakra.
Bob lives by his throat.
Yes, he has the golden throat and the silvern tongue. The third ray, active intelligence, higher mind, special virtues, wide views on all abstract questions.
Ah, yeah, that's right.
Sincerity of purpose, clear intellect.
Ooh.
Capacity for concentration on philosophic studies, patience, caution, absence of tendency to worry himself or others over trifles.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Vices, intellectual pride, coldness,
no,
isolation,
yes,
inaccuracy in details,
yes,
absent-mindedness,
yes,
obstinacy,
no,
selfishness,
no,
overmuch criticism of others,
oh yeah,
virtues to be acquired,
okay,
sympathy, tolerance, devotion, accuracy.
I think you're Ray, the third Ray. These descriptions aren't working right.
Energy and common sense.
Oh, no, I have
okay.
that.
Oh, of course.
We couldn't have done 3 years
okay.
without common sense.
You've already done these, but of course, like, Ray, Bob is evolved in his third rays. Good at higher mathematics. Seeing too many details may paralyze action.
What's that, a vice?
That's a virtue to be acquired.
To paralyze action?
Seeing too many details may paralyze action because of one's over-convoluted mind, because of this higher mathematics bent. You know what I mean?
That's a virtue to be acquired?
No, that is actually a sub... that's just a sub...
a sub-virtue.
Sub-reference. No, that's a sub-reference
that's something
to virtues that... Well, not a virtue, but... let us just say
something I got to overcome.
Another glamour.
Yeah, cosmic debris.
Yeah, that okay. would fit.
You like our theme song tonight?
I love it.
Like a celebratory.
Healing methods: use of drugs made of herbs or minerals belonging to the same ray of the patient under treatment.
Ah, really?
Yeah.
That's a discarnate sympathy. That's empathy. That's becoming the caller.
Absolute.
Yeah.
Approach to path, deep thinking, and study on philosophic and metaphysical lines.
I think, Ray, that's best summed up this past third year. We're going into the fourth year now, right?
Yeah.
Give us a little hint of the fourth, Ray, just a quickie, then we got
to
play the...
Well, I just have to go through these glamours. Glamour of always being busy, materialism, preoccupation with detail. Efficiency and self-importance through being the one who knows. Scheming and manipulation of others.
Ray, that's what I did the past year. That's why everybody had to start taping me, right? I was following through with those characteristics. For the
Scheming
third,
and
right?
manipulations of others is necessary. Deviousness.
Yeah.
And self-interest.
Okay, give us a fourth ray, a couple of quickies.
Oh, well, fourth ray is harmony through conflict.
That's coming.
Special virtues, strong affection, sympathy, physical courage, generosity, devotion, quickness of intellect and perception. Vices, self-centeredness, worrying, inaccuracy, lack of moral courage, strong passions, indolence, extravagance.
So what's that mean for this year coming out?
Well, it could get decadent.
Okay, thanks.
People are getting sick of being conservatives, Bob. Virtues to be acquired, serenity, confidence, self-control, purity, unselfishness, accuracy, mental and moral balance. Glamorous diffusion of interest and energy, impracticality of glamour of imagination, changeableness, vague and lack of objectivity, constant inner and outer conflict, causing argument and acrimony. Dissatisfaction because of sensitive response to beauty.
I think this means, Mike, this will be our last year. We'll have done the tetrad 4 years.
And that which
pay attention for the next 12 months is Bob.
Better.
Maybe his last year. The way
higher
that sounds.
Better.
Sounds like I go commercial
the
after that.
Ray of struggle, Rogers, activity, Thomas, inertia, balance, so man is torn in combat.
Okay, Ray, thank you. Thanks, Ray.
Had
your Hoover 5 minutes. Give him the Hoover, Mike. Thank you, Ray.
Okay, so Ray's able to go to another caller. Twitch of the Subgenius Show.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, Ray needs a dogma cleanse.
That's right.
He's got like 20 pounds of rotting dogma in his colon.
Yeah, we got an enema.
Right.
Any enema bandit? Are you the candidate?
I'm Kennedy, yeah.
No, the candidate.
The candidate, no.
But your name is Kennedy, isn't it? You called before. Yes,
no.
It is. What do you want to bring up, or do I have to...
I have a personal interest in the number 22.
Ah, did you hear the little wrap-up George gave us?
Yeah, well, I've heard vague inklings of Club 22. I don't know what it is.
Oh, you'd like to know what Club 22 is?
Well, see, I was born on February 22nd.
Oh.
In a two-year. Yeah. And my name is, numerologically, is 22. My first name, which is David, adds up to 22.
Yeah.
And my last name is 22. So.
Okay, listen, Dave, why don't you stay on the line. Can you hear the radio? You can hear us now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You want to know about 22? This is perfect. We got a compatriot for you. This is a guy named Zeke the Sheik. You stay on the line. We'll talk about it after. Don't start it yet, Mike. Just let it get. You know, the Bill Mitchell. Is it Bill Mitchell? Okay, David. Listen to this. Zeke the Sheik last April in Los Angeles was featured on a show, KPFK. Listen to this guy in 22.
Yo.
Well, what I have here is what I call the manure lure. See, I've created what I call.
I thought that was a sandwich.
No, this is actually the 2.2 of number 2. See, like in my life, the number 2 has played an incredible part. Like, see, it started, I worked for Plasters Local Number 2 on the first two 22-story buildings in downtown Los Angeles, which is the number 2 city population-wise in the United States. And then I was going blind from the spraying of asbestos on the giant buildings and stuff like that, so I went into trade number 2, which I was a rod buster or iron worker. And on that, I worked on Garden Grove Freeway, which is State Highway number 22, on two different bridges, LaSalle Street and Knott Avenue. And I also worked on the extension of the Second Street Tunnel, too. See, in other words, I carried the hod and I busted the rod, and then people thought I was odd when I went to work with the sod, but now they can see through the facade and realize that I got God flowing all through my bod.
So you've been a regular contributing member to our great society.
Well,
I
take organic material or matter and recycle it into soil. See, I call this the royal soil wrapped in foil so it'll never spoil, to prove that I was loyal and put in the toil and created the thing that will end the turmoil and really replace oil, and it makes my blood boil when they say I didn't play the game according to Hoyle.
So you're holding a foil-wrapped package of fertilizer.
Yes, this is a kilogram, 2.2. See, 1 kilogram equals 2.2 pounds weight-wise. So I call this number 2 in the 2.2 because, like I say, the number 2 has played such a special part in my life. I was married twice, had 2 children. My mother and father died 2 years and 2 days apart. I have 2 scars on my back from the second time I was attacked by a gang of irate black fellows. Not that I have any racial hostilities or anything like that, but as a youngster, I was went through several racial incidents that left me a little uptight for a while. But then as a construction worker, I met a lot of neat black people. And in fact, one of my best friends now is black, and we get along fine, and there's no feelings at all. But I have these 2 giant scars on my back that took 200 stitches to close the wounds. And like I say, the number 2 just goes on and on in my life. See, it's like...
Number 2.
So I call this product number 2 in the 2.2. See, the Sheik is the guru with the doo-doo. See, so what I do with the doo-doo is make like a, you know how a volcano is shaped like a cone?
Mm.
Well, we build like a spiral pathway around it to where it looks like, if you look at the profile of the pile, it looks like a screw. So I call it the mountain of doo-doo that grew and grew until it finally flew and turned into the brand new point of view. I just happen to live on a street called Mountain View. And I own the first 2 houses. See, it's like I was raised in the first 2-story house on the first double lot on Mountain View. See?
So you are destined.
Real true number 2.
What is so special about this number 2 that you have?
Well, it's like I say, it's it's organic matter that's been recycled. See, I call this the ladder of matter. See, the more matter that I scatter, the more the thing gets fatter and fatter, and all the critters get gladder and gladder. And a lot of people think I'm madder than the Mad Hatter, but it doesn't really matter as long as I scatter more matter. See, each load of dung that I've rung to be flung has added another rung, and now it's time for the song to be sung and Connie Chung to have her tongue sprung.
All right. But you are, according to the legal...
Okay, Dave, did you hear that?
Yeah, I got that.
Now, this is typical of the magic that's happened on this show. This was planned to be played tonight,
right.
The 22 cult,
right.
And then you call up to supplement it. This is some genius
right.
Co-making, co-creating.
Right. Well, I have the same problem here.
Yeah, you just notice it everywhere in your life.
It's the only number I ever see. And, you know, Moon and Gemini, the twins, Sun and Pisces, the two fish swimming in opposite directions.
Yeah, what other 22s came up? How old are you right now?
I'm 26, but my 22nd birthday on the 22nd of February, that was a heavy day.
Yeah, that
was full moon, actually.
That was 1986?
84. Yeah.
Well, you're 80, then you're 28?
26.
Well, that's 4 years ago.
Oh, it was 86.
Yeah, okay,
sorry,
86.
Yeah.
So February 22nd, 86, that was 2 days after I interviewed Dr. Beter, which was on February 20th, which is 2-2, right?
2-2, yeah.
Yeah. That's an important day, February 20th, and you were right in there, February 22nd. So do you want me to explain something about it?
Well, I mean, what does it have to do with duality, anything?
Duality is visual space, and we're dealing with tactile space, which is four parts. It's a quadrality, quadrivial, all right? It's quadrivial, not trivial. So 2-2 is a ratio of metaphor, figure to a gram.
So it's the higher octave of four?
Yeah, it's four. It's not duality. It's the tetrad, and the tetrad is the four-part structure. As any metaphor is two figure grounds, like Bob is to underground radio, as Wayne Gretzky is to professional hockey, right? An outstanding rookie. You know, an empire, right? So it's two parallel situations that you relate. They're not connected like visual space, like logic. So metaphor is a resonant interval situation. So 2-2 is the figure ground, therefore it's the essence of metaphor. So Club 22 is living by metaphor, but not metaphor as a symbol that's detached from the physical reality. Our metaphor mutates reality, interacts with it. Like the Eskimo says, how could I know stone without the word stone? If he didn't have the word stone, he wouldn't know what stone is, all right? Whereas the Huxleyan, Descartesian situation separates the symbol from the thing. It's a nominalism, separating the word from the thing, saying they're not related, all right?
But the thing is actually a symbol of itself.
Yeah, let me see, you're saying a symbol of itself. No, we're talking about cognition, that you can perceive the thing without the word. That's the Descartesian duality, whereas language is an organic process. Words are an organic process of cognition in the tetrad metaphor zone of 22. You see?
So what is it? What's the metaphor? It doesn't seem like a metaphor if it's actually affecting...
Consciousness is a... Okay, then we come... A consciousness is a metaphor of itself. Now, it doesn't mean a mirror image. It doesn't mean just a mirror image, because a mirror image involves the eye, which is... separateness, all right? Acoustic mm-hmm. space surrounds you, involves you. So our cognition is made up of all the senses. And when you just emphasize symbol as mirror image, as a reflection, then you get into separation and duality. That is the characteristics of visual space, but you don't want to stay limited just in that sensory matrix. So acoustic space knows that the spin doctors are music. That's why Zappa had to become a businessman right now, because the word makes the market. Our cognition is mutated by the news, the spin doctors, the software.
Okay, you know the guy, Jose Arguez?
Yeah.
Yeah, he moved from Boulder to Hollywood, see? Because he realized that he had to sell the Earth as a product. And he actually instituted Earth Day in 1970 at the University of California, Davis. And so when it came back in 1990, it was really, people said it was very, like consumerism, selling the Earth. That was his plan.
He wanted it to become consumable.
Yeah, exactly. He wanted those holistic images to be, you know, he knew that they were the ground.
Well, you know, he founded the idea of the harmonic Bobvergence.
Bobvergence, that's right.
Yeah, in August.
Yeah, somebody, I don't know if it was him, but they realized that the Mayan calendar ended on that day.
The first phase, and it goes about another 22 years until somewhere in
2012, there. I think.
Yeah, and it's not exactly 22, but I'm sure it's in there somewhere. But the thing about this is our third anniversary. We started our show June 18th, 1987, and we wandered for a couple of weeks, had a couple interruptions, Mike went away, missed a couple of shows, but our first big breakthrough show happened on the week of the Harmonic Bob Virgins in August 87, August 16th or 17th about,
right.
And that's when Bruce Rosenstreet really came down and complimented our show. He knew we had taken off because we talked about Elvis that day, right? Bruce was impressed. He used to work here at CKLN and the executive, right? Now he's a programmer, I think, right, Mike? You still here?
Yes.
So that was a significant time. So, again, the magic's happening. You're stimulating it because it's important to talk about Arguelles and the Harmonic Bob Virgins and where we're at today. Because many people think I'm the root cause of the changes that have happened the last 3 years.
Hmm.
Isn't that absurd?
Yeah.
It's true, though.
Let's go.
Along. Okay, thanks for the call.
Yep.
We've got another call.
Great.
I was trying to push things along.
Yeah,
this is the third anniversary of Church of the Subgenius. J.R. Bob Jobs. And we've got lots of paper in front of you, lots of things to read. But, Bob, the phones are hot tonight.
It's the church's night.
We like to, as I say, open up to as many calls as possible. Hello.
Hello.
Okay, go ahead.
I would just like to say that people are giving radio on its bad rap. It's not fair, Bob, and you're not protecting against it. I mean, your wife is getting into it, so don't give me this stuff.
Is this Ray or the imitator?
No, this is Ray, and Star Trek uses radionics, so, like, why can't we use radionics now as opposed to in the future?
Well, Ray, I just want to tell you that your video is very good.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Yeah, don't worry.
We were waiting for you to say that, but we didn't really have to ask anybody, really.
Oh, I love the way you address Bob in it. And it's so appropriate.
You noticed. We didn't even know it, but we know it now.
Yeah, you know it now. And it was an important video made in the summer of 1988 around the... it was 88? 88, I think.
That's correct.
In the summer of the conference, correct. You did some white magic around the Group of Seven conspiracy meeting.
Ariana was beautiful, wasn't she?
Yeah, a 20-minute video which has accurate images. You have at the end the television screen fade in and out with the ocean. You notice that? And the sea is the invisible electric crowd. That's the symbol that Joyce uses. So the television is the invisible electric crowd, tactilized. Yes, Mike.
We've always been with you, Bob,
and,
even before we were listening to you.
Okay, listen. We're not knocking radionics. We just got to give everybody a chance.
I understand.
All right?
It's just that I'd like them to just consider it. In fact, Dave, Eno is really into radionics. I've been listening to Eno and Lanois.
Yeah.
The latest Eno and Lanois. Dave, you should really listen to this stuff. It's great. You'll love it, Dave.
You know, Dave.
We love you, Dave.
You know, Ray, Dave's cohort, Martin's gone off to the hills with some guru. I don't even know if they're listening tonight.
Down with the gurus.
They need perspective in relation to me.
Okay,
we got another call, right?
Listen, I was going to say,
okay.
Do you have any of the intelligence community information on Tesla?
Yeah, I do.
Nikola Tesla?
Yeah.
Perhaps you would release it to us soon, Bob.
Okay, I will. Maybe a project for this year.
We'll talk about that. I'll talk about
Tesla.
Thanks, Mike. Have you seen the video yet, Mike?
I just got it in my hands tonight.
Okay.
I will when I get home.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, Ray.
We'll be seeing you soon.
We'll be hearing from you.
On video.
Yeah, we'll be hearing from you soon, too.
Okay, so, trying to avoid repeat calls, we just want to encourage the young people to
Well, Ray had a beef, he wouldn't have enjoyed the rest of the show. We got it off his chest, now he'll relax.
Okay, got another caller. Hello.
Perspective.
Dave's back.
In the white room.
Is Martin back?
He recovered. He came back from his retreat.
He came back to Bob?
Right, but you put him to sleep with that 22 minutes of silence at the beginning of the show, Bob.
Oh, okay, but you're taping. He can check it later.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, Dave, you haven't been on for a while?
Well, 4 weeks ago, you got me pregnant there, Bob.
Yeah?
I just went through 4 days of heavy contractions and...
Give birth yet?
It was a macroscopic gestation, Bob.
Gesticulation?
Yeah. 11 twins.
Well,
22 little organic robotoid Bobby Dave Juniors.
That fits in with this insect mandate we have on this show, right?
Yeah. I'm just waiting for the first alimony checks to be rolling in from Dobstown.
Yeah, when I say Ant-Man B, you know what that means? Do you know where that comes from?
No.
Ant-Man B.
I missed that one.
Ant being industrial pre-leisure society.
What? Earhart? And Earhart, okay.
Oh, your buddy Martin's still there. He told you that.
Yeah, he woke up.
And you mentioned Earhart. Okay, you know, Werner Earhart and Est and those Alan Watts, Esalen Institute spinoffs? They're the ones who don't know that the word is necessary, that language is necessary for cognition. They're the ones who say, go post-verbal, pre-verbal, non-verbal. They say, don't confuse the word from the symbol.
Right,
from the
I was going to ask about that, like you were talking about the cognition. And
I'm psychic, Davey, and that must be.
It's right up the alley, Bob.
Yeah.
The circle folding back on itself, and that, like the first act of cognition and all that?
Yeah, the old LaRouche stuff, yeah.
Right. Well, I was wondering about that. Like, if man was not extending his faculties, what would be the work of man? Like, it seems to be, what else would he be doing except extending his bodies, flowing from states into conditions in that way? I know that it's a cyclical flow, and I've learned that since the last talk, Bob.
Okay, Dave, cyclical circle is a visual metaphor. We're talking the electric effect, which is the Ouroboros consuming itself. And all our bodily extensions will consume ourselves, we've already done. And then we get into the real mysticism. And this is what Dave Worster explains through cosmic awareness, that all of our technologies are extensions of the cortex, right?
Right.
So we want to integrate the cortex, the right and left hemispheres, and our reptilian spinal cord, right? The reptilian core. Okay, so how are we going to integrate those three parts? For example, we started off in the beginning, Dave, the first phase in the Paleolithic phase, the ego was diffuse. And then came the Neolithic phase. The ego became articulated and defined in the mystery school of death, all right? Then came, that was in the agriculturalization phase.
I'm following you, Bob.
Yeah, and then we moved into civilization, moving from agricultural into military empires, the beginning of the rise of the male entity, right? The male archetype. Yeah, in that civilization phase, the ego became discrete, a literally defined center with a sharply defined periphery. And then in industrialization, the ego became a turbulent flow, a chaotic attractor with the power of a Cosimo di Medici, a Descartes, a Beethoven, and a Napoleon to break through boundaries and definitions to amass the glory and power and wealth that it felt was its proper destiny. And now, under post-industrialization electrification, the ego is no longer diffuse, certainly no longer articulate, unable any longer to be discreet in the privacy of its civilized study, and no longer able to expect the biosphere to sustain the amassing of its glory and wealth, you know.
This is what you mean when you say Rai has turned to essence?
Yeah,
the ego does
yeah.
Not exist
thanks, we're relating back. Now, the diachronic flow of the ego, which we just laid out, has come to its end, and now the synchronic dimensions of the spiritual daimon is beginning to enfold itself. This is the circle backing into itself and then disappearing as
okay,
a circle.
Okay, Bob, how would this process be changed if there was a fast and the electric environment was shut off?
I'll lead into that. So the spiritual daimon is beginning to unfold itself into temporal consciousness. Multidimensionality begins to be experienced, channeling, as the personal field of consciousness, the interrelatedness of all sentient beings, you know, sympathy for animals and dolphins, in the innumerable universes that are suspended from the tip of Buddha or Bob's hair. All right? Lacking the appropriate and futuristic image to imagine this. That's why Bob has to speak.
Okay, my last question about how would the process be changed? Like, it seems like you're trying to intersect that process by shutting down the electric environment. And I don't think that would happen.
Because we have to spiral back with the tetrad as the hidden image. We have to include that five phases I just laid out, all right?
Okay.
The first phase of shamanism, and then matriarchy, then religion, then art and science, and then music. We have to spiral on the 13th cone level, all those things at once. But now that we're in the fifth phase of electric planetization and solar government merging into universal mythic stage, we have to become aware of that as we spiral back. So we have to have a temporary media fast just to become aware of the end of the fifth phase. The fifth element is mud, right?
Right. So
then we go into the next level. Then we drop our technique.
Technique. So what if we don't drop the technique? Like, it seems not very likely that a media fast will happen, just like the book culture or industrialism wasn't shut down either.
Well, see, that's the surprising element of Bob, is it's going to happen. It will happen. Once we get through the surprising element of the rise of the beast in Europe and all that stuff, you know, the biblical stuff.
Breakdown is breakthrough.
Yeah, that'll happen quite quickly. And under electric condition, our second coming cushion that protects us, this will speed up so fast that the pattern recognition will turn over so rapidly that we'll be ready, we'll be exhausted, and we will not have been affected yet. Then Bob's agenda. I said several weeks ago that it's in the 22nd century, but, you know, we're living 200 years every 12 months. The 22nd century is on us rather rapidly, right? That's when Bob versus the church being this electric, discarnate, merging interpenetration, Bob versus that, he turns it off temporarily. Media ecology, all right?
Okay.
Just to make us fall asleep again and wake up. And then we can turn it on and we can grab any zone we want and surf and dance and play jazz.
Well, the awakening process might be happening in spite of Bob.
That's right, yeah. That's why, you know, let me just dwell on that for a few seconds. Maybe a little music, give me that little
Esperanto?
Yeah, that inspiration, Esperanto. Say this statement again.
That the awakening process might be happening in spite of Bob.
The first step. The first awakening.
Since all cultures and all time periods are imploding, and most people are becoming aware of that fact through New Age or through whatever process.
Is there any concept as a feel percept? Now, that's happening everywhere, all right? Every human being, pink and subgenius,
is experiencing that.
Yes, it's experiencing Finnegan's Wake. Now, if that goes on forever, we got problems.
Because we need to go to sleep.
Yeah, and since I'm the first to break through Finnegan falling asleep again, not Finnegan awake, then I'm sitting there alone. That's why the third Ray characteristic Ray Green mentioned was that I'm in solitude, all right? I'm sitting here waiting for everybody to come back and realize how interpenetrated they became. So, does that relate to what you just said? Let me just think. I think it does.
I think so.
Yeah,
Martin's providing the audio dynamics here.
Yeah, no. In other words, we got to have this media ecology, and it'll happen in an unpredictable point. That's why it won't happen until everybody has seen the pattern. And I'm sure people are seeing the pattern rapidly now.
Really? I tried to make an appointment with Connie.
Yeah?
I want to get in quick, and the only time I could get in was the 22nd of June. Too late. I had to cancel out, Bob.
You got
to
go away?
I'm going out west.
You going to BC?
That's right, on the 24th.
Checking out the subgenius enclave there.
Yeah.
Okay, Dave.
I'll just finish off with a bedtime story.
Okay.
It's some myth. I can't exactly remember the source. I think it's a Greek myth, maybe some Bible myth of an angel that's traversing the heavens, carrying the mirror of divine imagination. And this angel stumbles and falls and drops the mirror. The mirror falls to earth and smashes in a million pieces. So it becomes humanity's job to recover these small little shards of imagination, to recover it and somehow reassemble it.
That's like Humpty Dumpty.
Yeah.
Okay, now the electric environment brought it back. Reassembled
the mirror?
Yeah, man did it. Man, through his technology, reassembled the mirror, and it's an acoustic mirror. It's an analogical, metaphorical mirror, not just a visual mirror. The fragments are interpenetrating and unified.
But not everybody is cognizant of recognizing.
No, they're just experiencing it.
They're just being the effect of it.
Yeah, they are merging with the effect. They don't know.
How do we get people to look into that acoustic resonating mirror?
That takes a vast mega project, which is using mixed corporate media as art form, and that's what Furrylink does, and he's working for me. As a matter of fact, let me just read you something about Furrylink.
Yeah, I don't know him.
You don't know about, well,
I heard about him, but I don't really know his dogma or what he's about.
Well, furry lint is the art form.
In the belly button or something.
He's the highbrow art form on the perfect pitch chart. You know, the eighth level of the second coming?
Yeah.
If you look at the lowbrow art form is Ronald Reagan and John Paul II.
Right, yeah.
The highbrow art form is furry lint. And we did a special on CKLN on August 24th, 1988. Four-hour extravaganza called Who's Forgotten Furry Lint? And that's a hidden ground to Bob Marshall. All right?
Okay, I'll have to... You got that on archives, Bob?
Yeah, that's available for $10, $15. It's four tapes. $15, I think we charge. But the point is that that's Bob Marshall, Who's Forgotten Furry Lint, whereas Bob Dobbs is Hand Signals for the Blind. Okay, hand signals for the blind.
Okay.
Now, I'm just trying to find the furry link aspect here. It's funny. I'm going to have to check it later. I'll bring it back up later on the show when I get it, but I'll give you another furry lint aspect. Dave, I'm going to go into a talk. You can hang up, but this is another aspect of furry lint.
Okay.
We got callers, Mike? Okay, yeah. I think I want to say something about furry lint via this, what I'm going to talk about.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
Okay, thanks, Dave.
Thanks a lot. Thanks.
Night. Okay, Mike, a very interesting thing has happened at the University of Toronto. You know St. Michael's College, the Catholic part of the University of Toronto? Well, there's an English professor there named Robert O'Driscoll. And thanks to Scott, the man who went up to the library and read the campaigners and is quite disillusioned and on the edge of hating me now, right? He gave me this 2 weeks ago. And it is really interesting. Robert O'Driscoll ran, now, this relates to Ray. He has a fascination with Celtic magic, the Celtic world of radionics, Celtic mythology. Well, Robert O'Driscoll ran the Celtic studies program for 10, many years, from the 70s until 86. Now, he got fired by the new president of the University of Toronto in April, about 86. Now, what happened is that Father Kelly, who was the head guy at St. Michael's College, was suddenly asked to resign in January 86, the last week, the week the Challenger blew up.
Mm-hmm.
All right, he was asked to resign because Ratzinger, the Pope's right-wing ideologue, doctrine theorist, was coming to Toronto to speak. So the suggestion is it was the Opus Dei faction moving out the Jesuit faction, which Father Kelly was for 50 years at St. Mike's. Now, Father Kelly gets removed quickly in January. Robert O'Driscoll finds out there's something funny about this, so he reports it to the Globe and Mail. The Globe and Mail runs the story, but they threaten that they'll take action. The action is they fire Robert O'Driscoll. Meanwhile, in the middle of this problem for Robert O'Driscoll, who is trying to build a huge Celtic arts festival in the summer of 86 in Toronto, inviting Prince Charles to oversee it and be the grand host. So you see, there's the Celtic Holy Blood, Holy Grail, Gnostic, W.B. Yeats, Order of the Golden Dawn, the non-James Joyce faction, all right? They were going to move through the Jesuit Institute at the U of P at St. Michael's College. But the Opus Dei, they don't like that. So Prince Charles said he'd come. The man who was the contact for O'Driscoll was an MI5 agent, British intelligence. He was arranging Charles to come. All of a sudden, this man shows up just as Driscoll's getting fired to tell him that the man that Driscoll introduced him to the year before, a Mr. Ed, was the man running guns to Northern Ireland. All right? Now, Northern Ireland is a Protestant section. This Mr. Ed is a layman, not a priest, cardinal, or bishop. And the British intelligence says that man running the guns to Northern Ireland was the man, a layman, a Catholic layman, who arranged the firing of Father Kelly. Not a bishop, cardinal, priest, or pope. So the coincidence is that O'Driscoll hears this about Mr. Ed, and he pulls out, to the shock of the British intelligence agent, he pulls out a letter he got from Brian Mulroney in December 85 before this happened, saying, in reference to building up this big festival in the summer of 86 with Prince Charles, Mr. Mulroney advises, and O'Driscoll had been doing a correspondence with Mulroney for several years since 1982. Mr. Mulroney says to O'Driscoll, unknowing of what's going to happen supposedly over the next few months, that the man for O'Driscoll to see in organizing this Prince Charles thing is Mr. Ed. So Mr. Ed and Mulroney are buddies. Mr. Ed arranges for Father Kelly to be fired, which then leads to O'Driscoll being fired.
Right.
So O'Driscoll, he goes into a tailspin. He doesn't understand what has happened to his career. He had built up this million-dollar Celtic arts program. All right. So he goes into reflection. Maybe he listens to my show. But he put out a poem on February 11th. He published a poem. No major publisher would do it. No major publisher in Toronto would do it. But he published it here in Toronto with the help of a group of Poles. And so, therefore, it's sponsored by Warsaw and Toronto. And it's called NATO and the Warsaw Pact Are One. NATO and the Warsaw Pact Are One. This was released on February 11th. Notice the 2/11, February 2nd. Okay, he releases that. And in this poem, he was composing it in October, November, the events that put your head into a tailspin last fall, right? The events that I predicted. He was almost oblivious, but then it turned out that his poem was about what was surfacing in Europe. Now, this is a couple of excerpts from the interview is what he says. He says that this, the poem, the main metaphor is you have the beast of the apocalypse versus the black beast of Celtic mythology. Now, the beast of Celtic mythology is a god who incarnates through a toe. Okay? And the guy interviewing him, which is in the Innes Herald, April 1990, I'm reading excerpts from an interview with Robert O'Driscoll about his poem, which is 64 pages. We know the I Ching value of 64. He says, this god incarnates through a toe? And O'Driscoll says, a toe, yes. And I've moved that to modern times of a god incarnating through the big T-O, the big toe. Now, understand this, Mike. He goes on. He says, this god is a sort of spy hero. And then in section 5 of his poem, this spy hero discovers that the family that controls the Soviet Union controls the United States. And he also learns the nationality of that family. It's Canadian. This is what he found out. And he says, by the way, there's no imagination in this. No imagination in this. There's documentation of this. So the secret guys, the Illuminati, the modern pink bankers, the pink prison guys, the metaphor used for them are gray men in the poem. So the interviewer says, so the gray men are Canadian? And he says, well, they're all over the world. He says, but the key family suggested in the poem is Canadian. And then he talks about the next step is the realignment of countries, which is going on, is supposedly leading to the fact that one man stepping onto the world stage and cleaning up the economic mess, that person comes from T.O. Now, the spy is in T.O., coming through the god, coming through the big toe, dealing with the beast arriving in Europe, but the economic pink genius behind that, not subgenius, is a Canadian family. Now, is that Canadian family me, or is it the reason I'm in Toronto dealing with, as I've said, this is the Switzerland of the solar government, Canada. The significance of Canada is not known by the Canadians. But this poem is a result of him discovering this. And then he relates back to a little anecdote that he had with John Kelly in 1976. He said that John Kelly had the most impeccable credentials of any individual ever. I mean, this guy was head priest at the St. Michael's College for decades. And then he thought back that one night, he was at home, and there were four of us in the room. My wife, who most certainly wasn't involved in espionage, myself, claims he wasn't, Kelly was there, and this woman, who was, it could be argued, the anchor woman of espionage in Europe in the Second World War. This is in 1976. And O'Driscoll says, all I remember is Kelly suddenly stood up and says, quote, so, the family that controls the Soviet Union controls the United States. And O'Driscoll says, now in my mind, well, I just registered it and didn't think of it for a while. You know, espionage works through signs. So I figured that signs were going on between Kelly and this woman and that he was in a safe enough atmosphere that he could say what he thought. Now that was in 1976, says O'Driscoll. And he says, Kelly didn't have an irrational bone in his body. He says, I don't want to publish this, but I think I know the name of the family of the gray men. It's five families working as one, but I didn't know that until 1986, 10 years after John Kelly, Father Kelly, said what he said. So he goes on, and in poem he has Kelly as deep throat, but Kelly is off. Kelly died 8 months after he had to resign in January 86. Have we got a caller? Don't have one. Okay, I think we should rest on that. This is a poem I recommend. You can get it at the U of T bookstore. NATO and Warsaw Pact of One. The point is that it's about my work in Toronto. Now, O'Driscoll doesn't know that fact that they were one. He implies that it was a fact from 1945 on. He doesn't know the Dr. Peter division and what happened in the late 70s. He's just saying that the war game, the nuclear war scenario, was a fraud to keep the armaments going, the armaments industry going, which most people know now. Mm-hmm. And so he thinks there is a new military power surfacing as a result of them merging, and these two pacts, NATO and Warsaw Pact, will be gone. These two groups will be gone within a year. So he thinks his poem is important. But if you want to get it, it's a U of T bookstore.
Is the poem in the Innes Herald as well, or just the interview?
No, the interview, and it's the April issue. It's a very good interview. If anybody comes down here, I'll give you a copy. And the interesting point he suggests, now he doesn't explain this in the poem, the connection between Mr. Ed and Mulroney. But I've said the Bolsheviks control, the Warsaw Pact control Mulroney, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Mulroney's on shaky ground right now. So he's got to move fast. And so who is the Canadian family? Okay, I will go into that after we take this call.
Yeah, with the caller. You're listening to the Church of the Subgenius Show. We're coming up to a few minutes after 1 o'clock. My name's Michael Dyer with J.R. Bob Dobbs and our 3rd-year anniversary. Hello.
You're on. Sounds like they're changing their tape. Okay, Mike. This is a chart that might give us a guide to who that Canadian family is. At the top of the chart, you have the British monarchy. Now, revolving around the British monarchy are the families of the Hambros, the Beaverbrook, London Times, Hill Samuel Bank, Lloyd's Bank, and the Rothschilds, of course. And then the British monarchy in this group controls Eagle Star Insurance, which controls English Properties Limited, which controls Trizec, well-known Canadian name, which then goes into Edper and Semp, which becomes Seagram, which controls Hudson's Bay Company. Now, Seagram branches off into the Canadian Pacific Group, Macmillan Blodell, and through Fred McNeil, the Bank of Montreal, the Royal Bank of Canada, R.D. Wolfe at the Bank of Nova Scotia, E.L. Colbert, Toronto Dominion Bank, Marcel Belanger, Canadian Imperial Bank. I wonder if that's any relation to Jerry Belanger, our new programmer on Sunday night. So you have Seagram in the middle. So according to this chart, the Bronfmans are the Canadian family. And I always remember, I was haunted. Many years ago, a Canadian showed me a documentary of the Canadian establishment by Peter Newman. His book was made into a TV series of the Ten Families, the Secret Council of Ten. And there was a shot there of Trudeau. Well, I guess he was on the receiving line. People were coming by him. And when the Bronfman family came along, a major Bronfman guy, this was in the middle 70s, when he shakes Trudeau's hand, there is a strangest look exchange between them. I've never seen Trudeau look uncomfortable, really, other than that moment. So I always remember that image. If you ever see that documentary, CBC maybe did it. Check out that one scene, the interplay between Trudeau and Bronfman, because Beter explained that Trudeau wouldn't go along with the Rockefeller designs of the middle 70s. That's why Turner resigned in 75. That's why Turner came back limping in 84 as a Rockefeller holding spot to deal with Bolshevik-controlled Moroni, right? European control. Let's take another call.
Okay. Hello.
Hello. Bob.
Yeah, Sean.
Hi.
How are you doing the exams?
I have to write one tomorrow morning.
Did you do one today?
I did one yesterday.
How was it?
It wasn't too bad.
Did you use my stuff?
Did I use your stuff? No, it was for German.
Smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Fourth Reich.
I didn't use your stuff in school.
Not for the Fourth Reich, no.
No. Anyways. But no, I thought I'd call up before I leave for camp. I'm leaving next week.
Okay.
So.
Oh, I want to thank you for the mail. It came right on time.
You got it today?
Yeah, today.
Oh, great.
So what's on your percept?
I wanted to talk about Beter for a bit.
Yeah?
You know, the CIA, they stuck that really highly toxic poison in Fort Knox after they looted Fort Knox.
Yeah, in the gold.
Yeah. Now, do you have any idea what that poison was?
It's a kind of plutonium stuff. Many people that worked at the Fort Knox depository died after that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was distributed around the world. And according to Beter, a lot of it caused a lot of the increase of cancer rate in the Pennsylvania area, Kentucky area, around where the Fort Knox depository mm-hmm. is, because it was wafted around that area.
So I was wondering if maybe it wasn't an early draft of the AIDS virus. If maybe... if his sources
hadn't
gotten that straight, that could have been an early prototype of the AIDS virus.
He was one of the first people to understand the AIDS virus. He never got to talk about it on his tapes, but he talked about it to me privately after he stopped his taping. But he was onto this early experiments leading up to the AIDS virus, the swine flu stuff, mm-hmm. those experiments that were done in the middle 70s. He documented what the hidden ground of that was.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, Dr. Beter, while he was alive from 82 till 87, we were celebrating the fact the first strike didn't happen on September 17th, 82, so we got into some business deals, gold deals, me working within the Secret Council of 10. I wasn't the chairman then. But in dealing with some of the people in intelligence in the gold world around the planet that Beter made deals with, they all would not touch gold from the United States.
No, I guess not.
Yeah, they knew that Dr. Yeah. Beter had some information that even they didn't know where it came from, but they trusted him.
I thought they were giving him the information.
Oh, no. The people who gave Dr. Beter information were closely aligned with me, and they're just the solar government levels of intelligence. And the people who manage the world government level of gold trading were one step below the lunar government,
mm-hmm.
two steps below the solar government. These people... we're just moving gold around as part of political maneuvers, and Dr. Beter did that as a routine in the interval between 82 and 87 in the Harmonic Bob Virgins, waiting for me to take over and me to lead the changes that now we have. And Beter died on March 13th, Friday the 13th, mm-hmm. in 1987. His work had been done.
So where is that radioactive gold now? Who's got it?
Because
you can't really get rid of it.
Well, do you remember when Marcos... got overthrown in 86, all right?
Mm-hmm.
By 87, there were a couple of con men who released to the public, it was on all the news, the taped conversations with Marcos, him bragging that he had billions of dollars worth of gold,
mm-hmm.
all right? Now, nothing ever came of that gold. Nobody bought it
mm-hmm.
because Marcos, and that's why he's dead today, he had that gold. He was given that by the Rockefellers in the 50s and 60s, all right?
Yes.
And therefore, no one touches Philippine gold either.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people in the gold world that are working out of the Philippines trying to make arrangements with me and other people, but we'll have nothing to do with them because we know what they've got, and it's not worth touching at this point.
So are they just keeping that gold stash somewhere?
No, it's garbage. It's like the nuclear dump.
Yeah, they can't use it, but they still can't. They can't just...
They
put
try
it out in the open. They have to keep it
stashed
away, right?
Yeah, they have to keep it hidden. Now, that's why they run around the world. And a lot of people involved in the gold deals that harass me are always coming up with huge tonnage. And I know it comes from the Philippines because that's the only tonnage that's available at that level that we know can't be touched. They're stuck with it. They got nothing.
They should have stashed it at Chernobyl. You could have put it in there.
No, they don't want to get rid of it. They want to pawn it off to somebody. They want to fool somebody.
Yeah, but... Oh, so they use it as a weapon now.
Yeah.
If you pawn that off on someone, it's going to increase the cancer rate in that country.
Yeah, no, these Marcos people who got the radioactive gold, they know it's radioactive.
Mm-hmm.
They are trying to sell it to some pinks, some dupes.
So it's like the international wooden nickel type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So they pass it on to the next guy.
So that's in the future. We'll know in the 21st century who's a pink and who's a subgenius, who worked with Bob and who didn't. It'll be the kind of gold you have.
Yeah. Well, all the pinks will be dead by then.
That's right.
They're getting that gold.
And we're talking software gold here, Bob's tapes.
Yeah.
My show here with Mike is going to be the gold standard in the 22nd century.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, I've heard you mention before that the Axis and Cosmic Awareness had a battle. I guess it was in the 70s or something. The Axis came out on top of that one.
Did I say that to you privately?
No, I think you said it on the air.
No, I just said there was a conflict between the Axis.
Okay,
the Axis and the Cosmic, the Axis, we'll say the Axis and their medium and Cosmic Awareness. That battle's still going on.
I thought you said the Axis had won that, though.
No. That battle's still going on, as far as you're concerned. In other words, you're just getting the cosmic awareness material today, and, you know, this at this point, so is Wayne Morris, and other followers of the church are just starting to study cosmic awareness. And it's their job this next few months to relate cosmic awareness material with the excess material we've broadcast. And that's a little dialectic, a little conflict that will be resolved eventually, but you guys have to go through the process. I can't give you the answer.
So you're just waiting to see if we can figure out who's winning.
Yeah, who's winning, who's right, the cosmic awareness or the excess medium?
I would say the excess. Huh?
You go with the excess?
Yeah.
Did you see their new...
Well, because cosmic awareness is stating that they're expecting an alien war to happen in 1994.
Right.
Right, and we know that the excess already landed and that we've already aligned ourselves. Like, they're looking for aliens in the hollow earth.
Yeah.
And the aliens are on Venus. And, like, we've already moved off the planet. Like, they wouldn't be inside the planet. We're off the planet.
Okay, well, you're going away this summer. I'd say that's pretty good conceptual thinking about the prospects of your bet. I'll remind you and give you more support. You heard the news today, and this is what's going to blow away that caller who's going to call me in the next few months, amazed at my predictions and the excess predictions are coming true. You heard about Lithuania today. Gorbachev is backing off.
Yeah.
And that's going to happen for the next few weeks, and we're going to see that everybody saves face. The crisis was only a preamble in the early part of 1990 to create attention for the summit with Bush, part of media ecology, right?
Well, the Exos said that would happen.
Yeah.
That Gorbachev would back off.
Right, so the Exos get a few points for that.
Yeah. But well, they made a pretty clear explanation of why he'd do that, because Gorbachev's trying to get everyone to do their own thing.
Yeah.
Like, he just wants everyone to get fed up with him and start doing their own thing.
That's right, he's a sub-genius.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Okay, and I want you to study this one for me this summer. Could you come up with something on Jane Fonda?
On Jane Fonda?
Yeah, why was Jane Fonda part of the... every revolution has happened. I mean, she was part of the sexual revolution with Barbarella, right? She was an image, archetypal image, impugned and impregnated into the consumer software mind, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Then she became part of the Vietnam War movement.
Mm-hmm.
Then she married Tom Hayden, SDS, anti-Vietnam War radical, right? Mm-hmm. And now, as she's going through her, what do you call that stuff where you vomit? Anorexia and things like that.
Anorexia.
She has this anorexia, so she sort of starts to drop Hayden and moves into the frenetic replay of the American bias of kinetic and manipulatory space.
Mm-hmm.
That was aerobics, right?
Yeah.
She becomes an image in the aerobic intelligence, military operation as entertainment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's she doing now? Who's the architect working for Gorby of the... televised retrieval of the global village of the world government, Ted Turner. So why is Jane Fonda holding? She's linked up with Ted now.
Yeah.
She is moving.
Well, who's Ted Turner?
He's the creator of CNN, which is the news agency for every government in the world now.
Oh, okay.
It's the intercom.
So she's getting into that corporate mixed media.
She's involved with Ted Turner. Ted Turner, you look at this week's Newsweek magazine, the past week. It's on the cover, all about CNN's 10th anniversary.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of talk about Ted and Jane Fonda. Why does Jane Fonda, maybe you can find this out, I know, but this is a little classroom project for you. Why does Jane Fonda penetrate every movement over the last 22 years?
Okay. I'll take a look. I'll work on that this summer.
Homework.
Well, you've been an awesome customer over the past year, Sean, and I congratulate you on all your contributions.
So I'll get back here, I guess, in 2 months or so.
Or later on the show if there's no callers.
Yeah, could do that.
Okay.
Did you get that message about Zappa?
Yeah, very important message. But
was I right on that one?
I didn't check it out.
No.
I don't think you were, but I do have...
I don't know. I wasn't sure if it looked like him or not.
Well, the Zappa thing is what I'm trying to find on the furry lint quote. I have something on Zappa later in the show.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I'll talk to you later.
We got any more calls,
Mike? Yes, we do.
Okay.
Let's move towards wrapping things up. We're coming up to 1:30, so I'd like to finish. I'm sorry, I'm really tired tonight, but
okay. It's up to you,
I haven't had the energy, and if I could just walk out of here, you could continue. I could go home and
we'll do that.
Get some sleep.
Well, how about have Ken come in? Let's have a
whatever.
Special...
Sure.
Bring Candy in just to monitor and let
I'm
you go
just
home.
I'm fading, but we've got another caller.
Okay.
Hello.
You're on caller, baby. Ah, oh, boy. This one again. Can we let that go, Mike?
Okay, yeah, no, nothing.
Okay, Mike, here it is. I found it. Okay, remember I promised I'd explain furry lint to Dave, and this relates to Zappa. You see, furry lint was, in a way, based on Larry Flint, because he ran for president in 1980. 83 going into 84, 84 election, and he had Mae Brussel as his advisor. Mae Brussel, Holy Office extension to me. Note, this is after 1982. We have someone running for president using Mae Brussel's information. Now, what happened to Larry Flynt is a tragedy. A metaphor in Bob Marshall's work is Larry Flynt flipped into Furry Lint. Now, Frank Zappa plays a very key role in the play Who's Forgotten Furry Lint. He shows up at the end, as a matter of fact, to give a hint. And what's Frank doing now? Listen to this quote from a recent airlines magazine, I think it's called Continental Profiles. He talks about Frank meeting with, of course, the Czechoslovakian prime minister, the Yugoslavian vice minister, and things like that. Talks about his role in Eastern Europe over the past year. Now, here's the quote. With his new visibility, Zappa's credibility outside of music is building. And then a quote from the Financial News Network. Robert Regan says, I think everyone in the business world would say, yeah, Frank's out there doing something. He says, Havel is an artist and head of a country. These people have something to say, and they have the power. And Frank has something to say. He has ideas. And isn't that what business is all about, giving ideas? His involvement is just another way the world is changing. And then ex-mother Howard Kalin, a Flo and Eddie, adds this quote in the article. He takes it one step beyond. And think of Furry Lint. He says, I wouldn't be surprised if Zappa could carry it into a larger global political position, a part of the United Nations or something equally major, says Kalin. I saw his picture the other day in the Daily News. He didn't look like a rock star. He looked like a world leader. That could only happen under Bob's situation, right? Furry Lint and hand signals for the blind. Let's take the next call, Mike.
Okay. Hello. I wonder if this person...
Is he getting you mad?
No, I'm not getting mad.
It's Morse code. It's the silent spots between the tapping of Morse code, right? So, let's bring Katie in. You can go home, Mike.
Well, I don't know if it's appropriate. I'd just like to wrap things up in a half an hour, so I'll finish up.
We started late, Mike. I think we should go to 20 to get that hour and a half tape in.
No.
Can we go to 20 to 2?
But how would we get an hour and a half tape in if it started at...
It started at 10 after 12.
But the tape wouldn't have started at...
No, those people would have stopped the tapes. They would have rewound and waited till we started.
Oh, I see.
They're not going to include the silence. They got the point.
Okay.
But Mike, I'd like to know what you think of your three-year work.
Oh.
Maybe even take the call.
We'll try another caller.
Yeah.
Sure, then put me on the spot.
Yeah.
Hello?
Mike, give us Kent.
Okay,
before Mike goes, though, where is Kent? And come on in, Kent, but Mike.
No, I'd rather we didn't do that. I'll go until 2 o'clock, but I want to wrap this show up.
And then Kent comes in.
Kent can do whatever he wants to do because it's 2 o'clock and it's his show.
Oh, you mean you're on. You want to put something on?
I'll play music until 2 o'clock.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But I'd like to wrap up this show.
All right, so Mike, what do you make of this three-year project? Been drastic changes? Positive changes?
Yes, I think so. I'm a different person. I've lost a lot of weight and a lot of hair. Kent.
No, Kent. Don't let Kent near the tapes. He's got pizza on his fingers.
I think we've raised the profile of community radio up several notches. We've
actualized it.
Yeah, and we've harped back to the days of old-fashioned radio, radio theater, and radio news and radio drama all thrown into one. All our shows are, of course, scripted, and we come into the station. We quickly run through, do a few rehearsals. We read the script through once, and then we actualize it.
And then we have all these callers, some of them scripted, some not, mm-hmm. call in.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It isn't as spontaneous and magical as you might think.
No, not at all.
But
not
the effect all. Of it is.
It's very spontaneous.
There's no way you could create this effect of spontaneity that mm-hmm. we create, that tactile quality, without the planning.
No, it's interesting, though. It was in the recent issue of the Stark Fist of Removal, which is the official magazine newspaper from the Church of the Subgenius in Dallas.
The church that I'm versing.
Yes. Now, I mean, 3 years ago, I was... pushing the church. It was the church in Dallas that I believed in, and then you showed up on the scene, and my tone from then to now has changed considerably. Now I am, I don't have very much faith in the church in Dallas anymore. I realize
you weren't impressed with the Stark Fist?
You are J.R. Bob Dobbs. I have no reason to doubt it anymore, and that's not even a question or a consideration at this point.
I think the burden's on me to enhance everybody's understanding of that fact now, is to prove it in action.
It was interesting. I found the... did you get the last copy of the Stark Fist?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, there he's really heavily pushing the commodity value of the church. It's, you know, books, magazines, buttons, t-shirts. It takes up a third of the magazine. It's like any other publication now. It's full of ads, and obviously he's in trouble.
Yeah, he's pinked out, and I said that 3 years ago. Yeah,
and no mention at all of church activities up here in Canada. Not in one single page, and there are a lot of dense pages in that publication. So I'm a little disappointed, and it just reaffirms my belief that...
And it must be a sign of my media ecological control that I have that show up at your house in the interval between last show and this show.
Mm.
So that you could have that breakthrough insight pattern recognition.
Yep.
And say what you said tonight, and I appreciate that, Mike.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, my energy's kind of low. I've had a busy last few days, so...
I think you've used up a few minutes. We're getting near 20 to 2, right?
Yes, it gets 1:30. Yeah.
Okay, why don't we... you put on that tape. This is a summary... what do you call it? Like a summary of church members. What happened to church members? People who participated in the show. Do you see that tape? Do you have it in?
I've got the next tape.
What is it? Maxell? The Maxell of the short beginning?
Do we not have a music tape tonight?
Well, this is music. This is a song about the class of 87. 88, 89 that shared this show and what happened to them.
Well, yeah, and that's an important element of the show that has developed over the years as well. When we first began, it was just you and I and maybe a few guests, and then we started doing the phones, and it was a somewhat prehistoric effort. We didn't make a lot of headway, and even now, we have to make do with what we've got here, and it's sometimes difficult. And
but the changes are manifested.
Yeah, and the listeners are as much a part of the show as on any other program, and it's been reaffirmed by our station manager here, Poonam, who allows two shows to use the phones, which were legally is up in the air, but one is Saturday Morning Live, and the other show is this show.
Yeah, and appreciate the recognition and the allowance of that. I think we should give kudos to Connie, the wonderful work she does in healing, as we often get callers who try to get appointments with Connie, do get them.
Mm-hmm.
She heals those who suffer certain... fast changes in effectual turbulence as a result of this show.
And to all the callers and people who have come down to visit over the years, some who we've never heard from since, may have visited once. I remember the memorable fundraiser at first year when we had our friend come down from South Africa.
He lambasted Now Magazine. Was he right? Is Now Magazine a useful organ? Is it pinked out?
And fellow programmers here at CKLN as well who have supported, who have just supported us in the last few years.
And especially
Morris and Jim Patterson.
Especially those and Sean and Dave that made the three tapes of greatest hits that are available.
Yeah, and that whole phenomenon, of people now taping and archiving. And maybe that, I don't know if you want to bring it up or not, what we talked about on the phone about a week ago concerning setting up a physical space.
Yes, I think that we will make a bureaucratic little institute available soon, depending on certain circumstances. We will open up Bob's files to the public. And I think a lot of people, that would include a lot of Bob Marshall's work, and a lot of work put out by my subgenius colleagues like yourself, that will be included in this listening library, audio and visual.
Yeah.
So we're looking for a Bob Institute here in Toronto.
Yeah, so anyone has some physical space they might want to rent out, a corner of a room, that's all we would need. Just to lay out the archives and have a little chit-chat once a month and get together. And also thanks to, I guess, some of the women who called. I mean, we've been critical of it being an old boys' club, and we acknowledge that and recognize that, but we've had some good
profound women.
From women, and we just wish there was more and more regularly.
Well, they're the hidden ground.
Yeah.
In the sense that
they're listening.
There. Many subgeniuses that come to the station we never hear again, I think they mutate into womanhood. Mm-hmm. They stay back and enjoy the silence.
And to CIUT as well, who apparently at one point in vain attempted to recreate a church show of their own, but it failed miserably, from what I understand. And why you bother?
Well, Mike, I think we have accomplished our purpose. We've driven a lot of people to sleep tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But for those who value archives, they can hear this song, if they're sleeping now, later. This is a summary of the key subgeniuses and what happened to them over the past 3 years.
Okay.
Good night, Mike.
Praise God.
Harley runs a grocery store and Margaret doesn't care. Jerry drives a truck for Sears and Charlotte's on the make. And Paul sells life insurance and part-time real estate. Helen is a hostess. Frank works at the Jet teaches grade school and probably always will.
research, and Peggy plays organ at the Presbyterian Church. And the class of 57 has dreams. But we all thought we'd change the world with our great works and deeds. Or maybe we just thought the world would change to fit our needs. The class of 57 has dreams. Betty runs a trailer park, Jan sells Tupperware, Randy's on an insane ward, Mary's on welfare. Charlie took a job at Ford, Joe took Freddie's wife, Charlotte took a millionaire, and Freddie took his life.
John is digging cattle, Ray is deep in debt. Where Mavis finally wound up is anybody's bet. Linda married Sonny, Brenda married me, and the class of all of us is just part of history.
And the class of 57 has dreams, but living life day to day is never like it seems. Things get complicated when you past 18, but the class of 57 has dreams. Oh, the class of 57 has dreams.
That's all cool.